Everyone.
Hi.
We're Laura and Aria. Welcome to our podcast, Thoughts from Limbo. It's founded on the realization that that's all that life is, a giant state of limbo, one where we never have perfect information and there are no linear paths. All we can do is our best to navigate this big, beautiful mess. So come ride with us.
We bring you insights from successful entrepreneurs, creatives, and experts. People from different walks of life who can provide some of the answers to life's many questions and have a powerful story to share. They're all here to empower you, feed your curiosity, and help you navigate life, a life in limbo.
As always, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. We love hearing from you. In today's episode, we're speaking with the lovely Aud Asplov. At 43, she's a commercial model represented by agencies in Sweden, Paris, and Milan. She's also a yoga instructor, a perfume creator, and a mother of three. She was born and raised in France, but moved to Sweden at the age of 25 to start a completely new life. Since then, she's consistently reinvented herself in a quest to find her true passions. She shares her unique story and talks to us about finding empowerment in being a 40-plus model, and we also discuss the importance of mind-body connection and why self-care needs to be prioritised. She represents why we should view our careers as evolving works of art as opposed to linear ladders, and she was an absolute joy to talk to, so we hope that you'll enjoy this episode as much as we did. Hi, welcome!
Hi, thank you! I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, we're happy that you could join us. Are you in Stockholm right now?
Yes, yes. And it's cold, but it's beautiful. We have a lot of snow. So it's a wonderful, winter wonderland.
How was it with the daytime and nighttime hours? Because they're pretty short, right? The daytime.
Yes, now it's going towards the right direction, because until the 13th of December, it was going darker, darker, darker. So we had light between 10 and 2.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And now it's improving. So we see the light, but you really have to, look what's the forecast. And then if you see that, between 12 and 1, maybe you have a sunshine. You just have to go out now.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I don't think I could survive. I think I'd just wrap myself up in a sleeping bag and go lie on a rock in the sun somewhere like a lizard.
I can feel after many years in this country that it really affects my mood. Yeah.
Every time it's sunny, I get so much happier. And yes. When I look outside and it's gray, I just know I'm not going to have the same day. I have to mentally prepare myself.
Yeah. So it really, it's like you see the changes. And even because it's cold, I observed the last few years that even my body starts to hibernate. I don't know if the right word in English, but my heart rate is beating slower.
Wow.
And I asked my father, because he's a doctor, and he said, it's your body adjusting to the temperature. When it's colder, your body is like not shutting down, but it's saving energy. So the heartbeat is going slower. And because of that, then, the blood is not flowing the same way. So you don't have the same energy. And it's all physiological. So you're not going to spend too much energy, but the reaction of the body is like, you feel like, oh my God, I'm going to,
wow.
Everything is going slower and it's not working for me.
Yeah, I don't think I could do it. Nadia's in Barcelona now and she's every single day, she posts a picture of sunrise and it's always, you can see the sun, you can actually see the sun. My days are just cloudy.
Yeah, I know. That's why sometimes I'm just like, okay, I won't look at, my friend's Instagram post or anything with sun and, people in Australia in summer now. I'm just like, no, I don't want to see that.
And so you're in Stockholm now, but you're originally from France, right? So take us back maybe just where it all began, where you're from and your background.
Yes, so I'm from, I was born in the southwest of France, close to Bordeaux. So it's really the southwest Atlantic and in a small village close to the sea. So, surrounded by the sea, the ocean, the sun, a lot of nature. And both my parents and grandparents were very present and loved, you know, nature and traveling and hiking. So I was really raised with this loving family in the nature.
Mm. Wow, that sounds ideal. That's not far from Bilbao, actually.
That's true.
Yeah, wow.
I remember when I was a student in Bordeaux, a lot of my friends were, you know, going to Bilbao.
And so what was that like? What was France like? When did you make the jump, or what happened before you went to Sweden?
Yes, when I was between 15 and 17, I moved to boarding school, because in the village or the small town I was in, it was preferable to move to a bigger city to study. So I went there, and I was there for 3 years, and it was a Catholic boarding school with nuns, and it was very special. I guess, you know, when you're 15, you don't really ask your parents. It's just, okay, I'm going there. Yes, okay. So I didn't ask why, and I just followed, and I was there. And I was trying to think about how this impacted me in the life I have today. And I remember a few things. And if I had to say, it's like, you know, with this huge, so you have such a discipline in those schools, because you are so many students and you all sleep on the same, you know, at the same place. You don't have a lot of privacy. So everything has to be in a certain order, so it works. You wait for your shower in the morning, and at 10 o'clock, all the lights shut down. So there were no place for, you know, being you. Mm-hmm. You were just a group. You had to follow the rules and the order. And it's just how it was. And I remember once, and this is where I started to feel like something was, you know, not right. And I remember we were, you know, locked in the school during the whole week. So when you are between 15 and 17, you're looking for fun and just, you know, joy with your friends and a place to be just together and talk. And so I was in this church with my friend playing piano and dancing. So it was really like innocent, joyful moment for two teenage girls. And I remember one of the nuns coming and really shouting at us, like, how can you behave like this in the house of God? And I remember, you know, I still remember today this feeling that I started to question, like, something was wrong. How can you say, for example, that God is love, and then that joy in this case has not its place in here? And I think this is where questions arise, and I was, okay, now I cannot say yes to everything because I can feel that something is wrong. So I was in this school until I was 17, and then I studied speech therapy, started to work in France. And after only 1 year, I realized that this was not my path. I was not happy with what I was doing, because I was, you know, as a speech therapist, you are in contact with patients all the time, and you have the children, and most of the time they just don't want to come. They don't understand why I am here. You know, parents come because they can't write properly or they can't talk. But at this age, you're not able to understand that this is a problem. So so it was hard. It was great to work with the children, but you always had the parents asking for, you know, more and results. And so it didn't have any sense for me. And then working with older people with Alzheimer, it was like really such a shock, you know. I was 23 and I was innocent. It's like there were no barrier. Mm-hmm. And all what they felt, I felt. So it was like after 1 year, I was, you know, it was not possible to continue like this, because I took all their sorrow as well. And this is where I decided that I had to change my life. So I left, I had a fiance, I had my dress, my ring, a wedding day, and I left everything. I left him, I left my work, I left my country, and I moved to Sweden to start again.
And why Sweden?
Why Sweden? Yes, it's because I knew an exchange student. Okay. I didn't know where to go, but he was my friend. And I met him because my family always had students, foreign students all the time during the summer. And one particular student that he became my friend. So when I said, I want to go, I went there. And then he became my husband. So I moved to Sweden and I started a new life with him. So at the beginning, it was just, you know, it was like this huge adventure to learn a new language. Everything was new and it was amazing. So I started teaching French. I was working in a tourist board of France in Sweden, trying really to come into this society. And when I could the language a little bit better, I started to work as a speech therapist again.
Oh, nice.
In Swedish, mm-hmm. Yes, with children and handicaps. And it was such a challenge and I loved it. But again, after a few years, I realized, okay, now I am again in this situation where I feel like this is not my place. And because my husband get an offer with this job to move to France, we moved back to France 2 years. And then England, because he get an offer to move to England. And this is where in England, I really started to take care of what was happening inside me. I had 3 small children at this time, so I was busy with them. And I realized, okay, now, because my husband has this situation as an expat, economically, I can step out. So I started to work with myself and really go back to the creativity. I realized that creativity for me was a way to work with myself and to come back in connection with what was inside and that I needed to really go deep and search and look at to understand what was happening. Mm-hmm. So I started to study fashion design and then perfumery. So everything around beauty and aesthetic, I realized that that was something that brought me joy. I found a natural attraction to aesthetics. Then we moved back to Sweden, and this is where I started to work with a coach because I realized, okay, now I think I've done what I could do with myself. Now I need to go deeper. So I started to work with a coach and we search really where is the joy, because I felt like I've lost myself, I've lost all joy. I think I was in my 40s at this time, and I worked with this coach, and it was like really such, I'm so grateful I did this. So we were digging really like deep, what did you do when you were a child and to bring, it was natural and find joy. And I asked my parents, I asked my friends, I couldn't find myself. And then I found some old videos and I saw that I was organizing fashion shows with my small cousins every summer. So, you know, I would design the clothes, I put the music, and it was like all the adults would come and look, and it was, so, yes, so it was really this fashion world. Mm-hmm. And this is where I decided, okay, I maybe should go back to a model agency and mm-hmm. see if I can come in. And at the beginning, I was like, oh my God, you know, I'm 40. This is never going to happen. This is mm-hmm. finished. But I went there because a friend said, no, you know, the fashion world is changing. They need older models now. Okay, I'm going. And then I came in. They said, okay, we're taking you in. So I started with small jobs, but everything I was doing was bringing me joy. So each time, even if I had to sell, I don't know, products for not exciting products like, you know, fashion, high fashion, but just pharmacy or I don't know, food or anything. It was like just being surrounded with all those creative people and searching for the perfect image, playing with clothes. And so I felt like I was a child again. And I really loved this. We talked about, you know, empowering. How can modeling be empowering? And I loved it, this question. And I thought, you know, it's a little bit like when you're at school and the teacher asks, okay, now it's your turn. You're going to stand in front of the group and you're going to talk. And you start to feel like, oh my God, you know, you get all red. And this fear, if you manage to work with this fear, you feel so much in control, so much in power. So it's the same situation when you are in front of a camera. Of course, I'm scared each time because I'm just, you know, all those voices like, you're too old, you're not enough, someone could do better. You know, all of this is... But I thought that if I'm not starting with that, I can see that while I'm aging, those voices are getting louder. And if I let them take too much space, they are going to control me. So this fear you are working with here, when you're working with it and make it disappear, or your other areas of your life are going to benefit.
Yeah, I thought it was so interesting when we spoke the first time and you said how at first, obviously, like naturally, I mean, modeling at any age, I think is probably terrifying, but you always, you know, especially if you're like in your older years or you think that, you know, oh, I could never do this. And yeah, I just thought that it was because you always hear about the oppressive side of fashion or the oppressive side of modeling and, you know, the dangerous even aspects of it. And yeah, I just thought that it was just the first time that I had heard of modeling being something that's actually, you know, empowering and almost a form of self-improvement. Like you do it because you're afraid of it. You know, it's something that you made yourself do to prove to yourself that, you know, all those voices in your head.
Yes. Right. And then it's as well because, you know, we talked about the different categories into fashion, such a big world. But when you work as a commercial model, you are not, I think you're not exposed like the young models are. So I don't know this. I've heard a lot of young models talk about that. But my experience is really working with very professional teams. And I have an agency and they present me to a customer. Everything is prepared, controlled, and very professional. Another facet of powering women with fashion, it's important for... So the first part, working with fear, is more for myself. But I think that when, you know, when you are 40 and you see that... women, more mature women, disappear from the fashion magazine or all the advertising. You only see women as much younger. And when you pass your 40, at least with like this for me, it was like everything you see is younger. So it encouraged us to, you know, change the color of our hair, change because we cannot accept who we are. So I realized that if we can show happy, healthy, beautiful, aging women, then all the women can see this like, oh, I want to be like her. And then you're not, you know, in this fear feeling again, like, I don't want to be older because my group is not represented. So we need to show diversity and that aging can be very, very fun, actually.
Yeah, in fact, I think I, like, part of me can't wait to get older, if I'm honest. I feel like everybody paints your 20s as like this pretty picture, and frankly, between me and my friends, like, it's probably some of the most unstable years of your life, where nobody knows what they're doing, nobody knows where they want to go or what they want to do, and it's just like such a, I don't know, it's just such crazy years, but like not necessarily in the best way. I can't wait to get older. And I mean, I don't think 40 is particularly old anyway, but you have like such a, just a very healthy attitude towards aging that I really wanted to share with everyone, because you mentioned about, I think that if people think that 40-year-olds or 50-year-olds or however old year olds should look a particular way because you can't see, you know, you only see people that you're surrounded with, I think it doesn't necessarily encourage people to improve their health necessarily. So like when you see Women's Health or like a fitness magazine, you see young women, and it's like, you know, like there are 70-year-olds in my spinning class and they look like athletes. Like there's one woman in particular who sits in the front row who has been going for like 10 years and she is crazy good, and this other woman who does yoga who's like probably in her 60s or 70s, let's say, they look great. And I think there aren't enough of those people around that are shown, you know, on the media. So I think it's great what you're doing. And how is it that you look after yourself so well?
Actually, this was not something I decided. Funny how you can turn things to something positive. When I was 12, my dad, so I told you he's a doctor, and he saw my back. And I think I was picking something on the floor, and he saw that my spine was curved. So I started to wear braces. Between, you know, it's all of your spine is, so not during the day, but every night between 12 and 18 years old, I had to wear braces and it was terrible, but I was not suffering from it. You know, I was active, but I was not into sports that much. But in my 20s, I started to have a lot of pain in my neck. So a lot of pain. And then when I had my kids, you know, when you are holding your baby and you're looking on the side like this down to the face of everybody. So I had so much pain. I have pictures of me wearing always something like a support for my neck. So I started to be in a terrible pain. So when I was in France, I went to a doctor, but he told me, okay, you have to start to build your own braces with your muscles. You have to do something. And I was like, you know, I'm running, I'm trying to exercise, but nothing is working. And he said, my wife is a yoga teacher. You should go and see her. And this is where it all started. Because when I started practice yoga, I actually started to touch the muscles of the spine and something happened. And I've never been so close to controlling the way I feel with my body and to be in control with my spine. So I started once a week, twice a week, three times a week. And then I started to go to workshops. And then eventually I went to learn how to be a yoga teacher. So, and this is where actually it started. So it's from the problem, from this pain that I had to, you know, you don't have any choice. If you want to feel good, this is what you need to do. And because something was happening, it was talking to me, I started to continue and practice more. And I slowly realized that it was not only a change on the physical aspect, but something is changing inside as well. So you start to, you know, something is happening inside you. Like you realize, oh, this is fear. And why? And then you maybe work with your strength, but then you work with other parts of your body. So slowly you're going to be able to meet this fear again and eventually go up. And you know, the feeling after that is just like you feel so much empowered.
Yeah, like I remember we spoke about a TED talk, a woman called, I think it was Amy Cuddy.
Yes, and I saw it after. Oh, yes.
It's so good. And so she describes how, so they did an experiment where, well, I think they've done several, but the one she talks about is they tell a group of university students to, so some do a power pose. I think they just expand. Basically, it's about expanding your body, standing in a star shape, or, you know, just looking big. And then they tell other students to sit down, maybe cross their legs, cross their arms, look small. Yeah. And then after that, they go into an interview. And so the ones that sat in the power pose performed way better in the interview, or at least gave the interviewer the impression that they would be better candidates, because they found that it affects, so the way that you stand, your body language affects the levels of cortisol and testosterone in your body. They're like the two hormones at play, and I don't remember which combination of which is preferable for feeling more powerful, but she describes how, you know, the way that you stand, it literally affects how you feel and how others perceive you as well.
Yeah, and I think, like she said in the talk, it's very old and it's coming from nature. She was showing those pictures of the gorilla, you know, the one who is in charge. Or if you look at wolves, you know, the one who is in control is bigger and is lifting the chest, and all the others, to show that they are the chief, they lower the head, they lower their tail. So it's making yourself smaller, because if you're smaller, you're less strong, so you're less in power. And I think as well that, you know, if you think about it, in yoga we work a lot with the chest and to bring the shoulders back, and the idea is really to make the chest expand. And when you think what's under the chest is the heart and the lungs. The blood is circulating better, so you have more strength. So I think it's really like physiological. If you have a bigger chest, there is more space for heart, lungs, breathing. You will be more powerful. And then everybody's reacting to these postures, like very confident. And when I was working as a speech therapist with adults sometimes, we would actually work on this posture for when you repeat a word and it's just like
a stutter.
Yes, yes. And I observed that most of the time, those people, because they feel like they are not in control, they feel ashamed, they feel smaller, they would collapse with their chest and their shoulders. So a part of my therapy was really to work with the body. Work first with the body to open the chest, to raise the spine, then work with the breathing, and suddenly already the voice and the stuttering would naturally disappear. So it was like completely amazing. So yes, there is really something there. And I think in this talk, she was saying, fake it until you make it. And I love that. So really, trying, you know, if you can be aware of your posture, if you're going to a big talk and or an interview, and you know, watch yourself, like you're watching your words, watch yourself. Okay, am I really collapsing with my chest? I just have to lift, breathe, and then go in. And it's not, you know, it's not easy. It's not something that you can decide. It's a combination of strength and flexibility in your spine and other areas of your body.
Yeah, I'm really trying to get into yoga. It's my mission to become good at yoga. I've been saying that for like a year, and I am becoming more flexible, but not, I want to really make my arms stronger. Like any yoga teachers that I've seen have such strong arms, and I mean my arms right now don't do much other than open door and like carry laptops from one room to another. So I really want to practice.
Yeah, but you're right, it's funny that you said that, because if we talk only about the physical aspect, because there is so much more behind, if we speak about the physical, it's balance between strength and flexibility, so we call it mobility. If you have too much of one, then maybe you could, if, for example, I say, if you have too much strength, typically I would say a man coming to a yoga studio has been running a lot and lifting a lot. They are like wood, like the body is not moving, you know. So we need to work with more flexibility, for example. And typically more women, because of hormones, we are more flexible. Not all of us, but in general, we're more flexible and we need to have more strength, because what can happen, and this is actually what happened to me now, 2 years ago, I became too flexible. I was dancing a lot of ballet when I was younger as well. So the combination, you know, aging, practicing a lot of yoga and not enough strength, I started to have pain in my back and in my right hip. And this is where I realized that I had to add something else. So I found a teacher from the US and she told me about this technique called the kin stretch. And it's really working in your end range of motions. So you are working with your articulations, but you're putting yourself at the end range of movement. For example, if you can take your foot behind your head, like you would do as a yoga, as a yogi, if coming with your foot towards your head, you need to hold your foot with your hand. But if you let go your foot with your hand, are you able to keep your foot here, or is your foot, you know, coming down? And the discrepancy, the distance between where you were holding with your hand and where your foot can on itself lift here, all in between is a dangerous place, because you're forcing the joints to go where they cannot control. So in the kin stretch, you're working in those places to make your joints stronger. And this is what gives you so much mobility.
Wow, that's that. I'm going to try it out. Maybe yeah. If I start now, maybe I'll look like you by the time I'm 43.
You will definitely. And it's so such a good compliment. So for me, for example, I'm quite active, but I have changed the way I'm practicing over time. And obviously it's because we're changing, body is changing, but it's not only that, you become more aware of what your body needs. So when I was younger, it was more like, you know, running. And when you understand that maybe it's not this high impact training I need. So I'm trying to mix. I walk a lot and then I do yoga. Then I have added like some strength. So working with weight to make your arms stronger. So yeah. And then running a little bit, but I'm forcing myself not to run a lot. 3 kilometers once a week, it's nothing, but it's just maintaining the heart, you know, working and sweating. And then the kin stretch. So I maybe practice 5 times a week. It's more taking care of my body the best way.
Okay, cool. And so on top of, so you've got the modeling, you've got the, you're a yoga instructor, and then you also have a perfumery. So you sell perfume and you create them.
Yes. And it was when I was searching for my path, fashion design, I started to study perfumery and I found it so interesting. And I think it's because when I look at it, for me, creation in perfume, it's a search of creativity. I'm not so good at selling them, but the creative part, so interesting. It's so much, you know, there is psychology, there is research to understand the link between odors, fragrances, perfumes, and emotions. And this is, I think, what happened for me. Like when I work with perfumes, I'm talking about emotions. Mm-hmm. I had workshops for people coming to me and to create their own perfume. People are going a therapy working with perfumes. So I created one that it's a long process. to create is one thing, but then you have to, you know, control that it's safe. So I have one that is controlled and ready that I'm selling on my website. For me, it has been such a joy to create this perfume and to work with my memories, because it's really a perfume made from my happy place in France. So you have the woods and you have the warmth of the sand, and I had such a positive feedback. I'm so happy I did that.
Yeah, that's so cool. And what's the name of the website in case our listeners want to check it out?
So yes, it's my last name. So it's asklove.com. And this is both my portfolio, and you have an icon where you can see shop, where you can, for example, order samples, small samples, and try the fragrance and see if it suits you. The best is to try, see if it suits you. It's amazing what you can do with perfumes.
Oh, nice. Cool. We'll include a link anyway in the show notes in case anybody wants to have a look. And thanks so much for joining us, Aud.
Thank you for inviting me. It was such a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Thanks so much for listening, guys. We really hope you enjoyed the episode. As always, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. We love hearing from you. Bye.